Good afternoon, everybody. You're listening to Around the Block, a community news program from the Block by Block team at WPPM LP Philadelphia 106.5 FM. On this show, we explore issues in the Philadelphia region with voices from the community. I'm Milan Parker.
And I'm your girl, POC. And coming up, you will hear about a dinner party series that brings Philadelphia creatives together, a new Yemeni-style coffee shop in West Philadelphia, and a North Philadelphia barbershop that is on wheels.
But first, for the past 6 years, a mutual aid group called the West Philly Bunny Hop has been distributing free food to community members. Block by Block reporter Corinne Martin brings us this story about how a small team of volunteers created an organization that now serves more than 350 West Philadelphians households every week.
In April of 2020, as Philadelphia went quiet under a citywide shutdown, Gina Harris and Katie Briggs grabbed some food and headed to the local parks in West Philly. No grand plan, no nonprofit status, just neighbors who knew people needed to eat. That first Saturday became a second and a third, and now 6 years later, West Philly Bunny Hop is still here. I caught up with Gina Harris to talk about how it started and what keeps her going.
My family always invited people in to the home, you know, so my grandmother on my mother's side really, you know, accepted people outside of our family line as family, so to speak, you know, so we had a lot of cousins and aunts, you know, and I think that culture really made sharing important. So I think that really informs a lot of how I move today. Katie and I were living in West. I was very close to Cedar Park, and they're right across the street from Malcolm X, but we've been doing like Queer Soup Night. I'd been working with Free Brunch Program, doing free SA food shares. We all met at 1149 in South Philly, which was like an event, shared event space and kitchen that I had founded with someone else. That's how we met. So we had all of this experience redistributing food. We were working with Philly Food Works and Share before the pandemic, just doing food rescue because it was really important to all of us not to waste food when we know there's plenty of people who need to eat. We made a flyer. We were like, should we say every Saturday? And we're like, I don't know. Like, you know, because we didn't know how long we were going to do it. So every week was like, we're still doing this. We're still doing this, right? Yeah. And then I think probably by month two, we were like, we're just doing this. You know, so we started April 4th and yeah, I'd say by June, because then uprisings had just passed, you know, May. So that shifted things as well. Everything that happened with the housing crisis in Philadelphia was happening, you know, the encampment. So we were organizing around the clock for all of this different need, because everyone needs food.
What Gina describes isn't just logistics, it's discipline. The kind that gets you to a warehouse before anyone else arrives, just to make sure the setup is right. It's the same discipline that over time stops feeling like effort and starts feeling like identity.
I would get up early on Saturday before everyone would get to the warehouse and make sure stuff was set up, because people have to come in and be able to set things up easily and, you know, not pull everyone away from whatever it is they're trying to do so we can get food to people. So, you know, having that practice really instilled something in me about consistency and about continuing to do something even when it's challenging. You know, you build that practice and then it becomes like real normal for you, and it's like you need to do it. The other side of that, for the folks receiving, having consistency in an otherwise inconsistent environment is so important for survival. And you know, I think what also grew in that is wanting to serve people in a way that's dignified, respectful. You know, we took people's feedback when they come through the line. What kind of fruit do you want? Like, if we could get it, what would you get? Like, you know, we started really collecting information in a way that wasn't intrusive, because we were building relationships with people. And that's something also that informs a lot of the work I do today as a diabetic lifestyle coach.
Plenty of food programs ask you to prove you need help. West Philly Bunny Hop asked about your preferences instead. That belief that neighbors deserve to be asked what they need is at the heart of what Gina and her team built. And it didn't happen by accident.
When we started as well, We recognize there's a lot of volunteers who are white volunteers wanting to show up and help. And we had to make sure when they're working in the communities that we're in that they're able to be consistent in how they address everyone who comes, you know, whatever bias or experience they've had before or racist ways they haven't interrogated about themselves that they need to like own up to. Like, you know, we had some trainings. We had a couple black trans facilitators training our team around how these exchanges can look. You know, how can we really show up and be of service to people who we haven't encountered before in our everyday life. We wouldn't have chosen to, except that we're in the middle of the pandemic and we're all in this together.
One of the hardest lessons in community food work is this. You cannot do it alone, and you shouldn't try. Gina talks about building a web of trust across the city, knowing who to call, who's on what side of town, and who, like her, is a little obsessed with making sure people eat.
Feeding people is always like an urgent thing. People get really excited and feel really ambitious about trying to solve hunger. And then you start to do the work and you realize like no one person could ever do it, but we can do it together. So, you know, making sure that we're taking care of the people on our left and our right is very important. That's like a first step. You might want to sign up to volunteer, feel inspired about an organization, but then if you don't talk to your neighbors, like how are you really aligned with those kinds of things? Yeah. So I think it does start there, you know. You might be shy or nervous about it, but you also don't get better at things if you don't practice them. So practicing at home, you know, and then bringing that practice with you everywhere you go is really important. And if you start at home, you know, and your garden's well tended and your neighbor's garden's well tended, then you can bring that across the street and then around the corner. And then, you know, that's how things grow. You know, that's how things flourish. And that's how you create an environment that's abundant and not one that's built on scarcity.
Gina Harris didn't set out to run a 6-year food organization. She set out to do something that needed doing. And somewhere between Cedar Park, Malcolm X Park, Fishtown, and South Philly, over the last 6 years, she found something that a lot of us are still looking for, a practice that connects us to each other and to something bigger than ourselves.
Job hunting these days can feel really overwhelming. And for some, traditional networking like elevator pitches, LinkedIn talk, and business card exchanges are not actually translating into actual job opportunities. So Around the Block reporter Alicia Miranda may have found other options. She recently attended a dinner party for aspiring and professional creatives who are tired of stuffy networking mixers. Alicia brings us a story that talks about how the Makers Table event actually helps to foster real in-person connections.
It's a Saturday night, and I'm standing in a circle in a row home with people who've quit corporate jobs and are exploring side gigs. Some are designers and photographers. Others are solo writers who, like me, don't know how we fit into the definition of artist, creative, or entrepreneur. Instead of awkward icebreakers or business card exchanges, conversation starters begin with a prompt. The event I'm attending tonight asks, "What is an artist?"
I'm Alicia. I'm a journalist. I'm excited to be here, and I'd love to be an artist one day, but I can't draw, sketch.
This dinner series is called The Makers Table, which brings together a curated group of people around a central theme like wellness, women in business, harmony, and is hosted in a unique venue each time. Tonight we gather in a Washington Square West row home that also hosts small weddings. Other venues include Hotel Anna and Belle in Fishtown, a historic building in East Falls, and the Bach Building in South Philly. Attendees are asked to contribute something to the event, many of which become keepsakes at the end of the night. There's hand-bound sketchbooks designed by an engineer, mini prints of a painting by a video editor, a gemstone card deck by a jewelry designer. And the dinner itself was a collaboration between chef Patrick Wong and baker Saif Mana of Mana Bakery with a tablescape designed by an interior stylist. There's even an impromptu opera performance by a woman who runs a digital marketing agency. I met co-founder Sydney Welch at a Makers Table meetup in the Rodin Garden last summer and was excited to apply. As tonight's dinner gets into full swing, I stepped into the hallway to catch up with Welch, who launched these events in February 2024, to learn more about how these invite-only dinners work.
So we've done 16 dinners, similar to what you came to tonight, where there's a whole mix of people from all different walks of creativity. It's pretty straightforward. So we just have a link on the website and you can apply. You answer a few questions about yourself. You are welcome to upload your work or any details about your creative practice to help us get a feel for you. We typically fall between 16 and 20. And as we plan dinners, we try to cherry pick the right people. We make sure we don't have too many of the same type of people. Everyone gets a connection sheet to help them follow up with the connections they made from the event.
In between bites and drinks, I talk to attendees about their experience at the Makers Table and the connections they've made or are hoping to make. I'm not the only person attending Makers Table for the first time. Kristen Carter is also a newcomer tonight. She's a government worker who hopes to be a full-time writer one day.
So far, I feel welcomed and I don't feel out of place.
Although it is networking, it's more personable, it's more human. You get to have dinner and people aren't like shoving what they've done, their accomplishments, and you can talk to people and they're willing to help and connect you to people they know and vice versa. So it's nice to meet other people who are creative as well and learn what they're doing and what they contributed to the dinner. My contribution is a part of a story that I've been writing but put on pause. So hopefully I get some feedback and it gives me the courage to go forward with the story.
Some attendees say Makers Table events have led to professional opportunities. Stephen Ia is a video editor by trade, an emerging painter who has attended more than one Makers Table dinners. He met PJ Agbay, a local photographer who documents every Makers Table, and that connection opened up doors he didn't expect.
When I had hired PJ to be able to be my like photographer for one of the art markets I went to, started connecting, he brought me back to his studio. And he was like, I'm going to connect you with someone I know at the PMA. And that was Sydney. They have a night at the PMA where they have a bunch of people come and they also have vendors there. And so Sydney had put in my name as part of one of the vendors. I was painting live. So I had my easel set up and my booth set up. And from there, people would come, buy art. I would talk to a lot of people.
It's not just work opportunities that come out of Makers Table dinners. For some, these events are a way to get to know other creative professionals doing interesting or similar work. Georgiana Duddy, a set stylist who is also on the Makers Table team, and Shakira Hunt, a creative director, didn't know each other before tonight, but learned about how much they have in common.
It's been really beautiful. I loved that we got to sit next to each other because we discovered some really beautiful crossover of genres and mediums and work focuses. Georgie is a set stylist and I'm a creative director, so we have a lot of similarities in that regard.
And someone who really admires like multiple disciplinary artists that really take these opportunities as they come, use all these different skills to really like forge their own path. It's been inspiring.
I think I'm echoing the same exact thoughts. What comes to mind is connection and community. And I think there's no better way to do that than to break bread with other incredible artists and beings. And I think there's just been a lot of mutual support that we've been able to give each other. So I'm really grateful.
It's been a rough job market for a lot of us, but the Makers Table reminded me that there's an abundance of opportunities when you find the right community to support you and refer you. And Welch says that's exactly the point.
We really want to squash the competitive energy that can sometimes exist in all sorts of industries. So our goal is to just remind people, like, view everyone as a collaborator, and you will be more successful when you do that.
As I'm figuring out the next chapter of my career, I left the Makers Table that night feeling inspired. I even got a bit of validation that my work as a journalist is an art form and that the storytelling I do does matter.
Hello, how are you?
I'm Shandy.
What do you say? You are an artist. You're a storyteller.
Thank you.
It's very important to tell stories.
You can learn more about the Makers Table online at themakerstable.co. For Around the Block, I'm Alicia Miranda.
Thank you.
Several Yemeni-style coffee shops have opened in Philly over the last few years, providing gathering spaces for immigrant and Muslim communities and serving dessert and hot beverages until late at night, long after most other coffee shops in the city are closed. Around the Block reporter Casey Ruka recently visited one of the newest Yemeni-style cafes in the city to find out exactly what makes these places special.
Shabam Coffee is a cafe franchise based in Dearborn, Michigan that has expanded to more than a dozen cities across the country. Their newest location in West Philly was opened up by four friends, Fahad Azam, Kuram Gayas, Wakas Gayas, and Roshan Ahmad. When I met with Fahad at Shabam recently, he told me each of the co-owners brings a different skill set to the table.
I'm mainly responsible for social media, online marketing. Kuram has a lot of background with construction, and Wakas has managed a team before, so he has people management skills, and Roshan is our finance guy. He handles mostly HR and finance. And honestly, it was Kuram's idea to kind of, you know, open up a coffee shop. So he's basically the link between all four of us, kind of like the glue that brought us all together.
Like the other Shabam cafes around the country, the Philly location offers an authentic Yemeni coffee and tea selection infused with spices and flavors like cardamom, ginger, and cinnamon, as well as espresso-based specialty drinks such as pistachio and date lattes. When it comes to their food, Shabam Philly partners with local businesses like Old City's Aroma Bakery for sweet treats, like their distinct and colorful fruit-shaped pastries.
A lot of our bakery, our savory items, we either make them in-house, like our sandwiches are made in-house, and we partner with local Philadelphia bakeries to bring also that Philadelphia touch into our space here. So it's a good combination of, you know, Yemeni coffee with the Philadelphia touch into it.
Another Shabam staple is the Yemeni honeycomb bread.
It's a traditional Yemeni dish. Essentially, it's a bread that's stuffed with cream cheese. You warm it up and then you drizzle honey on top of it. And we've been getting amazing feedback on that.
Walking around the cafe, the interior is very sleek and modern with white and gold decor, warm lighting, and marble top tables with cushioned chairs. The cafe also has a lounge area that is tucked away with roomy couches facing the windows, which let in a lot of natural light into the space when I visited. Like other Yemeni-style cafes, the owners of Shabam are not afraid to challenge norms in cafe culture in the U.S., especially when it comes to operating hours. While many coffee shops and tea houses cater to breakfast and lunch crowds and close by dinner time, during the month of Ramadan, Shabam opened from 3 p.m. to midnight. Since then, they have switched to a schedule of opening at 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekdays and closing at midnight on weekends. Unlike in the U.S., where people are often grabbing coffee to go in a rush to get to work, in Yemeni culture, a coffee or tea is enjoyed to its fullest extent. In fact, Yemen historically popularized the concept of a coffee house as a hub for social life, which ended up spreading across the Middle East and beyond to Europe. Coffee houses became spaces for people to come together, have discussions and intellectual exchanges, play games, and enjoy their beverages. And while Shabam is popular amongst Muslim and Arab communities, the cafe's extended hours and location in University City have also been appealing to other members of the community, like students and healthcare workers. Fahad wants to see more local businesses have late night hours.
Yeah, the feedback we've been getting is, hey, Philadelphia shuts down at 8 p.m., 9 p.m. We need places to be open late. And hopefully, you know, this starts a trend within Philadelphia because we love, you know, the atmosphere, the ambience that we create here. Our customers love it, and we want other businesses to kind of follow suit.
The atmosphere at Shabam is one that encourages customers to hang out for as long as they want and is an enticing late-night alternative to hanging out in a bar for those who do not drink. The owners also envision Shabam as community-centered, leaning into the idea of cafes as a third space.
My whole intention is to, you know, not treat this just like a coffee shop. This is more of a community center, and that's been our goal from day one. We've done numerous events already. We've had an Eid bazaar. We've done promos targeting, you know, healthcare workers. We want to do live music. We're open to anyone and everybody. If you are an organization, whether you're a student organization or you're a professional organization, we're willing to work with you, collaborate with you. This is an open space for anyone and everyone.
Shabam Coffee is just one of several Yemeni-style cafes to open in Philly over the past few years. Haraz Coffee House is only a 15-minute walk from Shabam, and there's already a second Haraz in Fishtown now. Another cafe, called Muslims of the World, opened a location at 21st and Market in February. And this month, Kawa House is set to open a location in Old City. Fahad says he's not worried about the competition. In fact, he's excited to see those other cafes succeed.
Philadelphia, I think, is still catching up to some of the other bigger cities. And I think there's space for, you know, many more to come. I think it's only going to benefit the entire coffee culture to have all these spots opening up. I think it's beautiful.
This is Casey Ruka for Around the Block.
When most Philadelphians want to get their hair cut by a professional, they visit a barbershop or a hair salon. But in one North Philadelphia neighborhood, there's an option. Abri Cruz brings us a new story.
Located on the corner of Broad and York Street in the heart of North Philadelphia, there's a parked, fully operated mobile barbershop that includes a high chair, hanging robes, clipper stands, and a bold sign that says, "Nice Cuts, Barber Truck." Owner William Sanders is 51 years old, and he's been cutting hair since he was 15. During the pandemic, he switched to selling household products due to social distancing, but once the pandemic was over, he came up with the idea to combine both into one business. Now, people from all over the city can walk up and get a haircut, buy products like women's perfumes, lotions, and deodorants outside the truck on tables set up with toiletries, making the mobile truck a one-stop shop.
During the pandemic, I stopped cutting hair because of social distancing and all that type of stuff. So money stopped being as good, but I sell household products, women products, and stuff like that. So kind of during the pandemic out here on Broad and York Street, that started to blow up really big. You know, when people couldn't get to stores, you know, they would come here, you know. And that made a pretty penny at that time. So I was like, why am I cutting hair then? That's why I stopped cutting hair. But after the pandemic, when that started to slow a little bit, then that's when people started asking me to come back cutting hair. So I had the trucks already. So I said, you know what? Let me see if I can go ahead and, because I couldn't, I didn't really want to go work for nobody else. I didn't want to go work and pay somebody else booth rent and all that type of stuff after doing what I was doing. So I put this together myself.
Having over 35 years of experience cutting hair, Sanders has developed a strong support from the people in the community, including foot traffic and loyal clients like Hakeem, who have been trusting his services for years. Is this more convenient than a regular barbershop?
For me, it is, yeah. Because usually, like, I work in this area, so it's way more convenient for me.
Hakeem has been coming to the truck for his haircuts since the truck opened for business. Why do you come to this barbershop and not a regular barbershop?
Well, actually, I used to go to a regular barbershop, and he used to work in a regular barbershop I went to. Another person at that barbershop used to cut my hair, but they don't cut hair anymore. They into the food industry now. And I knew that he was a pretty good barber, so that's why I started coming in.
When people see this, it's like a one-stop shop, right? Outside, you usually have like women products, sprays, you got deodorants, you got lotions. And then if you wanna walk into the truck, you can get a haircut. So it's like, someone can get fresh and they can get their lady son or they can get themselves something. How did you come up with that idea specifically?
Well, it wasn't an idea that I just came up with. It's just that along with cutting hair, I kind of always sold stuff, you know, whether it was clothes, shoes, whatever, you know what I'm saying? And so selling some of the lady products and stuff like that is kind of some of the stuff that I might have now, and household products and stuff as well. Household products, a lot of people in the neighborhood, they appreciate that. So that's something that I just, it's just that I always just sold stuff.
Sanders said he started cutting hair when he was a teenager, sort of by accident, sort of by convenience, when one day his childhood friend didn't have money to pay the neighborhood barber.
Yeah, I learned how to cut hair when I was 15 years old. Me and a few of my friends, we used to go to people's houses to get haircuts. You know, we didn't really go to the barbershops. We went to people's houses, and one time we was at a barber house, and one of our friends didn't have enough money, and I was like, well, let me cut it. And all my friends were like, yeah, let him cut it. And the barber let me hold his clippers and let me cut it, and it came out right. So at that point, none of my friends never went back to that barber anymore. I went home and told my stepdad, told my mom. He went out and bought me some clippers, and he never went to his barber anymore. So I was instantly became, you know, their barber.
Sanders Mobile Barbershop is in a convenient location that's easy to get to. It's a 3-minute walk from the Broad Street line, a 10-minute walk from Temple University, and right next to the No. 4 bus stop, which Sanders says is perfect for him.
Because I kind of draw my own attention, and I'm visible. I'm visible for everybody riding up and down the street. You know, so people see it, and they come when they're ready to come. But they want to come. They want to come, so that's the good thing.
And there's one other advantage to having a barbershop on wheels. It's not tied to a single location. While Nice Cuts operates in the same spot near Broad and York on most days, Sanders says he's also able to drive the truck to other locations and set up a whole mobile barbershop for special events like carnivals or back-to-school events. Until next time, Abby Cruz.
This episode of Around the Block was produced in collaboration with Philly Camp Spring 2026 Community Radio News Fellows, who are also hard at work on this season of Block by Block, which airs on Wednesdays at 5:30 p.m. on WPPM 106.5 FM.
And of course, we want to show love and give a huge shout out to everyone who makes this possible. Shout out to Brad Linder, who's the Radio News Managing Editor at WPPM, Peter Liu, who's the Radio Operation Manager, and Allison Durham, who's WPPM's Radio Program Manager. I'm your girl, POC.
And I'm Milan Parker, and special thanks to Kay Michelle Watson, who is our board operator for this episode.
And Around the Block will be back next month, so definitely mark your calendar, June 21st, with another episode featuring more stories, conversations from our team of Philadelphia area community journalists. And you can find more episodes of Block by Block on PhillyCam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you find your podcast.
Thanks for listening.
One final note, the Pennsylvania primary election is less than 1 week away. Democratic Congressman Dwight Evans will retire at the end of his term in January. On Tuesday, May 19th, voters in Philadelphia will choose the nominees to replace him. Voters will also cast ballots in races for the governor, lieutenant governor, and state house races. There are also two ballot questions that Philadelphians can weigh on.
One is whether the city of Philadelphia should establish a retirement savings board as part of a plan to create a system that will let workers in Philly contribute to a city-run retirement plan if they work for a company that already doesn't have one.
The other ballot question will make the Office of Youth Ombudsperson a permanent part of the city government. The other ballot question would make the Office of Youth Ombudsperson a permanent part of city government. The office helps to advocate for young people who are involved in the juvenile justice or child welfare system, among other things.
Polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, May 19th, for Election Day. You can check your voter registration status, find your polling place, or get other information by visiting vote.pa.gov.
Get out and vote!